101.4 on FM Sport.
Listen to the 90-minute football show with me, Peter Davis. We're joined as normal with the Chelsea fans, the Fulham fans, Brentford fans, and of course QPR fan as well. Although he's stuck somewhere between Twickenham and Richmond, so hopefully you'll get in here just after 7:15 this evening. Plenty to talk about over the weekend. Obviously, QPR winning, Chelsea winning as well, Fulham drawing, Brentford drawing, but a good result up at Elland Road. We'll be speaking to the Brentford fan a bit later on. That's Stuart. And we're also going to be asking for your emails, and you can email us at 90minuteFootballShow@onfmradio.co.uk. First of all, then, let's talk about the cup draw. Well, let's talk about the cup matches then today, shall we? I didn't see much of the Chelsea game, Ian, but they won comfortably 2-0 against Stoke.
Yeah, good time to be playing Stoke, I thought. No Shawcross, obviously, as we know. No Matty Etherington either, who I think is probably their best player. And also with last week's events, I think Stoke probably felt that they were going to be sort of under observation this week as well, and but they were sort of on their best behaviour. Worth noting, the first yellow card in that game was after 85 minutes, and that was John Terry for a tug back. But it was typical Stoke. It was exactly as you'd expect them to be. They are, I think, a really good side for given the money that they've got, and the players that they're able to attract. It's a very physical game. When you've got the ball, you're always facing 10 people. When you've not got the ball, the moment they've got it, the ball's up the park looking for Sidibe and Fuller. And then they're always going to terrorise you from set pieces and throw-ins.
They take about 45 seconds to take a throw-on. And yet, you had about 3 minutes injury time. Yeah, surely this would be 6 or 7, shouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they should. But you're right, with the lap and sometimes Ivanovic for Perth throwing. But I thought we were good today. It was nice to see.
To see Ilario make some saves, and he wasn't tested at all, was he?
No, that's true. They had it was Mikel who got the goal line clearance quite early on. That was a set piece for Stoke, but after that, I thought as long as we were the best team in control of the ball, they were dangerous. You were always aware, particularly with the Delap throw-ins, and there were many of them, that it could go wrong. But the defending was better this week than it has been in previous weeks. I thought Alex had a blinder. I thought, as I said, Ferreira did well at left back, and of course that allowed Malouda forward. Nice to know Carlo Ancelotti's listening to me. All he's got to do now is start to play Joe Cole a little bit more often, and we'll be singing from exactly the same hymn sheet.
Well, we've got an email already about Joe Cole, but we'll go on to that in a minute. Tom?
Evening, Pete.
Our resident Fulham fan.
That's right.
Every week we speak to you, it's 0-0. What's going on?
I think, yeah, Roy Hodgson does seem to be the master of a 0-0 draw. I think yesterday it really feels like an opportunity missed, to be honest. Home draw against Spurs, good time to play Spurs. They were missing a few players, missing Genus, missing Bentley. Defoe was on the bench with an injury niggle, no King, no Woodgate either. We really did miss Danny Murphy yesterday. He, obviously our captain and talisman in the middle of the park, he failed a late fitness test. And the game itself wasn't great to watch, to be honest. It felt like a real cup tie atmosphere. I think both teams were a little bit maybe overawed by the occasion, perhaps. The state of the pitch didn't help. It really is looking a bit cut up now, and obviously, hopefully, as we leave the winter behind, it will improve in the next few weeks. But the way we play football, the way Spurs play football, the pitch didn't really lend itself to really the best sort of game. Weren't really many chances for either team. Gomez did make one good save from Aguirre header. I think I don't really remember Schwarzer making a proper save. He had a couple of sort of half chances that he managed to save comfortably. But in terms of an actual save, really had to make a real effort. I don't really remember one. But yeah, I mean, we've now got the replay in a few weeks' time, and you know, our away record, as we know, isn't great. Not to say we can't win there. I mean, Spurs have lost at home this season. They've lost to Stoke. They've lost to Wolves. You know, games you would expect them to win and win comfortably. And we've obviously beaten Bale away in the Europa League. We've got a draw with Shakhtar Donetsk. So, obviously, I remain optimistic. But, as I said, yeah, the chance of that first trip to Wembley since 75 looks to me to maybe have gone.
We're talking about the first trip to Wembley. I mean, it's 32 years since you got there, but is it right that if you win a quarter-final, you should play at Wembley?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much of the opinion that the final should only be played at Wembley. I mean, it strikes me as strange, particularly if you get, say, Manchester United and Liverpool hypothetically playing in a semi-final, that they should have to come all the way down to London to play that semi-final. I mean, we used to have the FA Cup semi-finals at Old Trafford and at Villa Park, and I think that was a much better system, really. I mean, it's better for geographical, it's better for fans travelling, and, you know, the sense of occasion of a Wembley final isn't lost.
But doesn't that devalue the FA Cup, Ian?
I think you're right, Pete. I think the thing with the semi-finals being at Chelsea is much to do with recouping three quarters of £1 billion that it cost to build the stadium. We'll get to the England game later, I'm sure, but the pitch.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, sorry to interrupt you, but you've got the FA Cup, you know, with tradition. You've got the last round was drawn by Tim Lovejoy, and today it was drawn by Jason Cundy. No, I mean, what I'm saying is, it's not like it used to be, and that the FA and the Football League want everyone to go out and watch an FA Cup games. The crowds have been, you know, really low to say the least. You know, and there's no wonder there's no passion for the FA Cup anymore. I mean, Villa done a good job today on Reading, but we said this before, Chelsea win the FA Cup, they are not going to go and parade it down the King's Road. Although, fair to say, Fulham might go down the King's Road and parade it.
I think we certainly would.
And Pete, I mean, you and I remember sort of how it was. Sort of, you know, late
mid-70s, I think, go back to
early 80s, when if you were an 11, 12-year-old child then, it was everything you wanted was to play in an FA Cup final. It isn't that way anymore. I think that's partly to do with the influx of first of all foreign players, and then more particularly now foreign coaches. England is the only game that has really ever valued its cup competitions. You don't get the same value to the cup competition in Spain or Italy or Germany.
But we're going that way, aren't we?
We are going that way, and I think it's the influence of the foreign coaches who don't place as much importance on the cup. I preferred it as I think you did when it was taken very seriously. But these days, even Championship clubs are resting players on FA Cup weekends.
I think the other thing is, I mean, I remember, well, obviously I don't remember in the 70s and 80s, but from what I read is that every player and every club, you know, the FA Cup final was the showpiece event of the season, and in some ways was more important than the League Championship. Now, obviously since the influx of Sky and the Premiership and millions of pounds that, you know, it's worth to clubs in the league, you know, they are going to be interested in that top four finish or staying in the Premiership. You know, you've got...
But it is normally the teams in the top four that get to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, Portsmouth obviously are the only non-top four club to have won it in the past, I think, apart from Everton as well. I mean, in the past, well, since 16 years since Everton won it. But yeah, I mean, you see the attendances these days. You see, you know, even as Ian said, even clubs in the Championship and teams at the bottom of the Premiership resting players. And obviously there's this new proposal now as well for next season to play cup games midweek, which, if anything, is just going to devalue it even
further.
Well,
that's right, but wouldn't it be great, you know, if you take a look, we're all focusing on the top four of the Premiership, you know, the top three make it, and then the winners of the FA Cup get into Europe. I mean, what about that idea? And not necessarily, you know, I mean, if Chelsea play Portsmouth in the final, then Portsmouth get into the Europa League.
I would love to see a situation where the final Champions League place was going to the FA Cup winner. I think that would instantly revalue the FA Cup.
Better than fourth playing eighth.
I would say so, yeah.
Well, absolutely. Thankfully that idea was put on hold this week.
OK, let's talk about the semi-final games. I mean, Aston Villa will play Chelsea. That's cut and dry. So what's your views on that one, Ian?
Hey, tough game. Obviously, we've been to Villa this season and lost 2-1 there. Martin O'Neill, very, very canny manager. He's got a good squad there at Villa. I don't think they're the most adventurous team that there is, but you know, that he's perfectly entitled to play the way that he does, and it's certainly bringing him some success. So I don't think anything's cut and dried there. If looking through the two squads man for man, I would suggest that we're possibly the better squad. But on the day, anything can happen.
On the day, though, Villa played a good game against Manchester United, and it was only a bit of magic from Rooney that won the cup for them.
Well, as I say, they've beaten us as well at Villa Park this season. They're a very, very talented squad.
We'll go and play Portsmouth in the semi-final. You've got to go and win at Spurs. But potentially, if you do...
Spurs semi-final, and I'm sure Roy Hodgson will have something to say about that. But yeah, as we know, as I said, our away form isn't outlane in a few weeks' time. There's not to say that we can't get that result. We haven't scored against them. We're totally dominated. But not a game where they had many chances. I mean, we gave away a silly goal from a mistake, and their second goal was a deflected free kick that went into the goal. So yeah, I remain optimistic, and obviously, you know, the attraction of playing a team such as Portsmouth, you know, what we might have said, the easiest team left in the competition, is there. So hopefully if we get through Spurs, I'm confident we'll be in the final.
Well, we've got a couple of emails. We're going to go into the Chelsea one just before we play the song, but first of all, the Fulham emails. We've got an email from Mike saying about the Roy Hodgson gets loads of praise for a home record. Why does he not get criticised for Fulham's away record, which has to be said is really poor? If you look in the league at the moment, away from home, you've won one game away.
That's right. I mean, it has been a perennial problem for Fulham, not just under Roy Hodgson, but under Sanchez, under Tigana, under Coleman, I think.
It's because you've got about 10, 12 people that go to these games.
That could be part of it. Yeah, but then, you know, the same way, the reason the fans don't go to games is that they know that perhaps that we're not going to get a result. As I said, yeah, I think in total, since we joined the Premiership 10 years ago, I think we've only won about 30 games or less out of 170 at something like that, which obviously is not a good away record at all. But on the other side of the court, I know we've only won once this season, but I think our away form is, or away record is something like the 12th best in the Premiership. So, you know, it's not that terrible. We don't win very often, but we do grind out a lot of draws, and Hodgson sets us up basically to play two banks of four, very well organised, very well coached. You know, we go into games away from home looking not to concede. We don't often look like scoring, but I mean, I think we've shown this season, as I said, we went to Bar when we needed to win, and we got three goals.
Well, we're talking about the Old Trafford potential game. Well, there is a game next week at Old Trafford. Fulham will visit Manchester United next week. Ian, well, actually, one more question on Fulham about this fellow that you've taken on loan, Akaka.
That's right.
What's happened to him?
Yeah, I mean, he potentially is a very good player. He actually played against us this year for Roma, scored the winner in the Stadio Olimpico with a good header. And yeah, I mean, when he was brought in, I think a lot of the fans are quite excited. He's got potential. He's still quite raw, but he's young. He's quick on the ball. He's a good dribbler. I'm not sure. I mean, I do know that he doesn't speak English yet. Maybe that's a factor in, you know, he hasn't been seen much. He does seem to be down the pecking order behind David Elm. And we have had a lot of players that we've signed and Hodgson has kept on the bench or away from the first team for a time before he thinks they're obviously ready for the Premiership. But, you know, with a six-month loan deal, there's not much of the season left. And now, you do have to question what was the point of bringing him in.
Because David Helm is ahead of him. QPR were rumoured to be after David. And was a 6 foot one.
Yeah, he's 6 foot two, 6 foot three. He's a big lad. He's, to my mind at the moment, he's not, from what I've seen of him, he's not really Premiership quality, to be honest.
He's probably an ideal QPR signing.
Probably, yeah. Down there at the bottom of the Championship. Yeah.
Oh, cheeky one.
But maybe not for long.
No. We'll talk about QPR later. We have got an exclusive interview with Neil Warnock coming up a little bit later on, and also Casper Gorks as well, and there's one or two other bits, and we want emails as well. Email us 90minutefootballshow@onfmradio.co.uk. Back to Chelsea, Ian, and obviously the talking point over the weekend is about Joe Cole. Does he deserve to be in the first team? And if he doesn't get in the first team, will he be off?
It's a very good question. I mean, as I've said, I'm a Joe Cole fan. I hope what is going on at the moment is Joe Cole is attempting to talk up the value of his contract. What scares me is that the closer we get to Joe Cole being out of contract, it kind of invites somebody maybe from Man City or perhaps even one of the Spanish sides to perhaps approach him behind the scenes and give him a little nudge and say, well, you know, if we're not going to pay a transfer fee for you, then this is how much you could be earning with us. At which point suddenly Chelsea have a problem. I certainly hope he stays. I would like to see him in the side a little bit more often.
But he can't be doing any good for his England chances.
Well, absolutely not. I mean, it's been a while since he's been in an England squad, quite apart from anything else. I mean, he's back fit and playing again, yet didn't get a sniff last Wednesday. And with wide players playing well. Obviously, there's Aaron Lennon to come back in as well. He's up against Downing. He's up against Milner. And Young from Villa as well. There are plenty of players that are competing with him for that place in the England squad. I want to see him back in the Chelsea side. I want to see him with a new contract. I think for Chelsea and for England, he's a very creative player, and I'd like to see him in South Africa.
Okay. I think a move down the Fulham Road to Craven Cottage could just be the thing he needs to reinvigorate his career, perhaps, mate.
I couldn't afford him. what we're going to do now, we're going to play a song for Joe Cole, and we'll be back after with a Premiership.
On FM Sport.
Bit of The Clash. Oh, it's good to hear those classic songs,
classic
isn't it?
Song, yeah. Love them to bits, mate.
We've got another classic one coming a bit later from The Jam. We do ask you to email in. We've had a couple of Brentford fans emailing, and we are going to answer those very soon, because there was a good trip down to Leeds being had by a lot of Bees fans. We've also got an interview with Neil Warnock, Casper Gaultz. We want QPR fans to email us. And obviously Chelsea fans, even though we're going to be stopped discussing Chelsea the next few minutes or so, we do want you to email in, because after 8 o'clock we'll have a sort of free-for where all the clubs in West London will be discussed, and that includes Chelsea, Fulham, Brentford and QPR. Let's go back very briefly to the FA Cup today, and Aston Villa came back to beat Reading.
Fantastic comeback. Yeah, I mean, obviously, whatever Martin O'Neill said to them at half-time did the job, because, I mean, in the first half, 2-0 down against the team struggling at the bottom of the Championship, he can't have been happy.
Absolutely brilliant game as well. I mean, that was sort of FA Cup fare, just as we love it. 2-0 down at half-time. I think it took them about 6 minutes to make that two apiece, and absolutely brilliant comeback.
It's a shame, though, because I do like the underdog. I really, you know, that's one thing about the FA Cup that I do like. I do want the underdog to win, and when Reading are 2-0 up, even though they're the fake hoops, I'd like to see them have beaten Villa, or it to be 2-1 with 5 minutes to go. But the game was pretty much over when they go 3-2 up Villa.
Oh, and that's maybe why we love the FA Cup so much, because there is that English thing about really wanting the underdog to win, and I can think back and remember sort of Blythe Spartans and various
Chesterfield, yeah, sure, in the semi final.
That might have been before I was born. Blythe Spartans.
Brendan will have nightmares about Wrexham to this day, I should think. And I can remember Chelsea being beaten by Leighton Orient, by Millwall.
Well, we won't talk about Vauxhall Motors.
Sore point, that one.
There it is. Portsmouth, what a good story there. They get through to the semis as well, beat Birmingham.
Yeah, great.
We'll go on to goal line technology later, but at least they got through.
Yeah, great day for them. Obviously with the plight of the club at the moment and the long-suffering fans, you really do feel for the fans there. And yes, they was a great day. I mean, I watched the game. It wasn't a great game, to be honest, but on reflection, Portsmouth did have the better of that game. Piquion in particular, who got the man of the match, had an excellent game, and I for one would like to see him at Fulham myself.
Well, two great, not great games, I should say, but there were two games in the Premiership that were vitally important, one for Manchester United and one for Chelsea. Man United managed to sneak a win against Wolves. Vokes had a chance to equalise in the last minute, but Scholes scores 100 goals.
Oh, they really did sneak it as well. Yeah, first of all, let's say congratulations to Paul Scholes. He's had an absolutely fantastic career with Manchester United. One team all the way through it, same as Ryan Giggs. Congratulations first of all to him. I thought that particular goal did rather go through the keeper, though, and as you say, that very late Wolves chance, it could all have been rather different, couldn't it? The late Wolves chance, the lad Vokes should have buried.
If you can hear a slight noise in the background, it's because our QPR fan has turned up. There's a lot of traffic in the Hammersmith area. So anyway, back to the subject. Obviously, Manchester United winning, Arsenal convincingly beat Burnley.
Yeah, convincing, but then, you know, less convincing than I would have thought. I would have said that would have been an easy 4 or 5-0 comprehensive hammering, but, you know, obviously Burnley got the equaliser, and at one point, you know, were level.
And Bentner did show again that he's not on the class of Drogba.
That's right, I think. Well, yeah, he had a lot of chances, I think, and couldn't put it in the net. For a striker, it's not good.
Given those chances against the Burnley defence, I would have fancied a hat-trick, Pete. I'd be
looking at you, looking at you, mate, you wouldn't. At the foot of the table, Hull City are in big trouble. They lost 5-1 to Everton. Everton are really on fire.
I think that's 6 home wins in a row for them now. Everton, yeah, really, really resurgent after a poor start to the season. They're now, you know, looking at the top 8. You know, they'll be fairly comfortable there. I suppose they were playing a team today, Hull, who just didn't seem to turn up at all. I mean, lacked fight, lacked passion. Didn't really have anything.
What do we think of Phil Brown? We did discuss it beforehand. What do we think of Phil Brown?
He's a difficult man to like, isn't he? But
this is the best trip I've ever been on.
Singing's probably better than his management.
the point I would make, I mean, in his defence,
he's not got a good team in his defence.
You look at the top managers that we've seen over here in recent years. You're looking at Ferguson, you're looking at Wenger, you're looking at Mourinho, and of course at QPR we've now got Neil Warnock, who's been welcomed with open arms. These aren't people you choose to go for a drink with. Just the football managers don't tend to be very nice people, or the most at the very top. They aren't people that you'd want to go for a drink with, are they?
Well, I suppose if you see him on TV and you've got Wenger moaning at everything and you've got Alex Ferguson, you know, not giving straight answers to things, allegedly, in case he's listening, you do get that. But you are some nice fellas. I mean, Roy Hodgson, I've got to say, comes across as a nice fellow.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, isn't it? There's Franco Zola as well.
But yeah,
at the very top, those managers, and you look overseas as well, there aren't
Look at Mourinho.
Many.
What a nice guy.
Mourinho was brilliant copy. He was always great entertainment, but I wouldn't want to go for a beer with the guy. I really wouldn't.
Well, let's just review the top of the Premiership. Manchester United now at the top of the Premiership, 63 points. Chelsea, with that game in hand, that's coming up soon against Portsmouth,
I believe away to Portsmouth, okay. In a couple of weeks on a Wednesday.
OK, well, that's 61 points. Arsenal, they're third, they're also 61. And the battle for the fourth place is hot in hut, but that's held at the moment by Tottenham. And at the foot of the table, you've got Portsmouth, Burnley and Hull. Now, after the next break, we're going to be speaking to... we're going to have recording from Neil Warnock, who after yesterday's game gave a press conference. It's also going to be Casper Gorkes as well. We'll be discussing the Championship in detail and how well Newcastle were doing at the top of the table. And also our Brentford fan, Stuart, who made the trip down to Leeds, is going to give us exactly what happened and maybe give us some details about the Coventry fans that allegedly went on the train as well. But he might not want to go into detail about that and might tell us a whole... a story about
him. Thank you very much, Pete.
London's on FM. It's about more than just music. It's about great music broadcasting through the heart of London, like this. I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right, some of this. On FM Sport.
You're listening to the 90-Minute Football Show. We have got emails from Brentford fans and emails from QPR fans as well. We're going to discuss Queen's Park Rangers now. Obviously, Neil Warnock. Joe, welcome aboard. You're out of breath.
Thanks a lot, Pete. Yeah, I've had a journey from Mill coming over here, 2 hours, you know, yeah. And I've left my car right down the bottom.
All of us were here 6, an hour prepared.
Yeah, okay, all right.
But, I mean, obviously the immediate effect, Warnock effect, straight away.
It's fantastic, you know, there's a huge feel-good factor. You know, the first hour, two goals in 20 minutes, and... I even see you take your shirt over in the queue block. I mean, what was that all about, mate?
Oh, did you? Oh, right. Did you see that, did you?
Yeah,
I was gonna
well,
keep
my,
that
missus, my missus saw it and she was cringing, like, and that was almost X-rated, like, you know.
There was two fellas behind me that just went bare.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, let's join in, you know. Let's just wave the T-shirt. I've had enough stick
but
this
season.
But
how good was it? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, it was superb. You know, I'm not going to say that... You know, we're completely safe because, you know, I mean, it's so tight at the bottom of that league. Mm. You know, it really is tight. And we desperately, desperately needed those points yesterday. It was a decent showing against West Brom. You know, they're not second in the league for nothing, or third in the league now, I think they are. Mm. You know,
I predicted we wouldn't win that game, but we did when it comes to...
I have to be honest, I would have settled for a 0-0 or a 1-1 before the game kicked off, like, you know, I don't think Warnock's had enough time, obviously, you know, he's only been there 3-4 days, you know, but he's certainly, he got a real response from the boys. You know, got a bit sort of brown pants when Chris Brunt scored, you know, on 36. You know, I was really worried, like, you know, I thought, here we go.
We don't have brown pants, we only have red or white in the case of Ashley Cole.
Yeah. But I got a little bit worried, you know, and I thought, if we could get to half-time at a 2-0, you know, you could see the boys were sort of, you know, there was a bit of nerves there, you know, and certainly amongst the faithful on three sides of that ground, you know, the singing
stopped.
Be honest
with me, right? You be honest with me. At half-time, everyone goes down for a beer.
Yeah.
Right?
I did.
What, you didn't, okay, but you chat to friends and everything. Did everyone around you think we were going to win that game at half-time?
No, nobody did. No one around me. Most people weren't really talking. We were just sort of looking at each other and thinking, please, God, let this, you know, let it finish now. Abandon the game, anything. Just let it finish now. But, we, you know, West Brom came out in the second half and they had a go at us. But we sort of steadied the storm, you know, the ship a bit, you know, and the storm weren't so bad. And then Bozacki took that free kick, you know, the bouncing bomb. And it went in, you know, happy days.
And someone actually made the point, Warnock is maybe a lucky manager, because under Hartford, that free kick hits the post and comes back out and we're still holding on to two.
Possibly I'd agree with that, but he's so animated, isn't he? You know, yeah. The whole game, he's shouting instructions, you know, he's doing this, you know. And like Leroy Rossini said last night, you know, he's the Marmite man. You either love him or you hate him, you know.
Joe, you made the point there that he's only had two or three days to affect things at Loftus.
Yeah.
In his approach to the game, was there any difference to what you might have seen under Harford? Were you playing a different way? Or do you think it was just him getting a bit of motivation?
I've got to be honest, right? I couldn't see a pattern of play because I was so nervous. I was so nervous. I didn't actually calm down until Wazeki got that third goal. And then I started to watch what Rangers were doing. I mean, he took Tarab off just before, about 2-3 minutes before, and brought Ramage on. And I thought, that's a weird substitution. But you had Jerome Thomas going down the left. Ramage went over to the right, and it sort of...
Well, that was the difference between the Paul Hart substitution, where he brought Boyd down one, I think he brought Connolly, he brought three defenders on.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were in no man's land. But Ramage, I think, came on to do a job. And that was to make sure that Jerome Thomas wasn't going to go bombing down
the left. That's right. And he was quiet. I thought he was pretty quiet. You know, I mean, we know all about Jerome Thomas. We had him down the bush like 5-6 seasons ago. You know, he is a quality player.
Mm.
The one that I don't understand, and it was the first time I've seen him, because
is Elvis Priskin?
God dear, what I mean, those yellow boots. You know, and what's the man all about? He, in fairness to him, he did win a few headers.
But didn't he set up the ball for
and Watson? I think we'll be 1-2 and it did really well, and I'm just so pleased that...
This week's game's coming up, and also the Championship, and also Division 1 after this, because we did interview Neil Warnock after the game.
He's tried in the last 18 months to win on their first game in charge, and he's the first one that's done it.
Well, that's nice. Obviously, I've enjoyed the whole day, really. I've enjoyed the whole week, apart from, obviously, the disappointment of everything that went on in my departure from Palace. But once we got here, it's been superb. You know, it's... They can't do enough for me. The new owners, Amit and Ishan, the chairman, have been wonderful. Talked about, you know, the vision for the club, and I'm sure they've enjoyed it today as well, which is you know what it's all about.
You've got quite a lot of different style of players here as well. There's.
I mean, Championship. You need a mixture of everything in the Championship to be successful, and you know we've got a lot of the ingredients that you need. You know, probably one or two short in certain aspects, but. You know, I've only been here 4 days, and the players have given me everything, so I can't complain at all.
There's maybe a few more what you might call flair players here, I would say, than with due respect to your Crystal Palace squad.
It depends how you look at it. You know, I think the jewels in the crown. I've never had ability like that ever since the start of my career. So you've got to look at the positive side, really. If I could channel the ability that they've got in the right direction, you know, we're in for a good time.
Does it hurt you the way that you were treated when you left Crystal Palace? Because you stayed there for so long. Well, people like Simon Jordan, you two are really good friends, and all of a sudden for him to come out today and say those, it must...
Well, it's only in the Daily Mirror.
Well, that was me.
You know, I'm obviously sad at the comments, but I don't think I want to... Do my washing in public, if I'm honest.
Yeah, sure.
There'll be an appropriate time, I'm sure. Another chapter in the book.
You're paying him soon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad they won today. I really do sincerely hope, you know, all the work that we've put in over the last 2.5 years, that they, you know, they can get safe and then move on to the next, you know. Simon's worried that they're going to get relegated, but they're not going to get relegated. There's too many characters and good players in the squad.
What's it like when you leave a club in that? I mean, are you able to send a good luck message to them ahead of today's game?
I spoke to Paul Hart last night, and I told him what kind of lads they've got, and to enjoy it. You know, he's had a bit of a rough time, hasn't he, the last 9 months. But I told him that he really enjoy managing a team like that, because they've got so much guts, commitment, and we've had so much thrown at us, I say we, over the last, you know, period, that but they're all genuine and honest players, and it's a great result from today.
Did Paul Hart tell you about QPR?
Not really, no, he didn't. I don't think he knew much about it.
That's very true.
Sorry.
Neil, Gus Poyet was in the stands today, and potentially after...
What, taking over?
Oh, well.
Not yet.
Rowan Vine maybe on loan? Have you thought about players in and out?
No, not yet, no, crikey. I had to change the team sheet at the start, because I didn't realise we've got too many loan players in the squad. So, poor old Marcus Bent told me, I'm sorry, Gaffer, you've got five in. Can't have me on the bench. So I'll have to make sure I check up a little bit before I put the team sheets in.
You're still getting used to the personnel?
I think they really need a guiding as well, the players, if I'm honest. I think they've had enough people over the last so many months. Players need to know where they are, and the response today was magnificent from everybody. No individual, everybody that's been around the club this week.
Now, can you check, what reassurances have you been given about not getting any interference from above? Because obviously the previous regimes,
I don't really comment on it. I mean, obviously you guys comment on it, but I don't. I just deal with Amit and Ishan and trust them totally.
Because obviously it's been a problem in the past.
Well, that's up for you to come in. I know I've no problem. I've got Ishan and Amit who are totally behind me.
But if they... I can't imagine that you'd be the sort of guy that'd be happy if they started saying, well, you know, I think Taram's doing really well at the moment, he should play.
I think Amit and Ishan, I'll keep repeating it, if you want, till you keep asking me. I think are very, very much behind me, and it's great to work for him. Do you want to say it again?
Formula when you're going to a club, do you give it a couple of work? How long do you give it before you start wanting to turn things around, or before you make your mind up?
First training session. Really enjoyed the first training session. Learned a lot about the players in the first training session, and they learned a lot about the players. It's been a good week.
Neil, have you had a chance to look at Maurice Vols yet, and have you got any initial thoughts?
Yeah, Maurice has played in the reserves. I think it's the first time he's played for quite a long time talking to him. But I've not had enough chance to look at reserves. Yeah. I've got enough on my plate at the minute with what we've got.
But knowing what you do about him, if a player like that was to get himself fit, obviously,
he's eligible to be signed now, isn't he? So there's a possibility, but I've not seen him, so it would be unfair of me to comment on that.
But you presumably know a lot about all of the players from your years in the Championship, seeing them play and that kind of thing. But in terms of getting in somewhere and knowing your squad,
anybody. When I first came, I wasn't aware of anybody other than Mikel Lauterbach and Marcus Penn, who I've had under me. I haven't got a clue about the others. So it's all new to me, and everybody has a clean slate. I think some players will be, you know, probably glad that somebody new's come in. Are you with me? Others, I don't know. But, you know, I think they've all taken it on board, and it's an exciting place to be, I think, when you work hard and get the right result.
In terms of the new teacher getting to learn the names of the new class and
I did well in the teacher. I did well in the names, really. Not like, you know, I'm usually like Bobby Robson, but there's a couple I can't pronounce. I have to call Tarbs. I call him an Ali because I can't pronounce the names. But
thank you very much.
Thank you.
101.4 on FM Sport.
Well, that was Neil Warnock, obviously speaking after the game. And just want to point out, actually, that the reporter that kept asking the questions about who would sort of be helping him out about signings and stuff was the same journo that asked Jay Simpson continual questions about his future at Arsenal. Then the next day, we read that Jay Simpson wanted to play at Arsenal. So, but at least he kept asking the question. But I think from that, Joe, we can gather that Neil Warnock, in future, will be picking the players, deciding the players, but will be consulting him with Ishan and Amit.
Yeah, I mean, really...
I mean, the guy couldn't have asked him so many more times.
No, he couldn't have, but, I mean, that's the way it should be. You know, it's obvious Neil and his advisors have been talking to QPR for possibly two, three weeks, you know. I mean, it's obvious, all the speculation that's been in the press, it's all come to head, And I'm sure that he would have said, you know, I want to come to your club, but I want to be totally in control of all football matters. I don't want any interference from upstairs. I don't want any outside interference or anything like that. So, yeah, he answered all the questions that he was asked. He's a character, you know, and the Rangers fans took to him instantly. That, you know, that was so good. Decent gate as well yesterday, you know, up on the usual
gate. Do you think he put 1,000 on it, do you think?
I think he did as well. I mean, West Brom had a pretty decent support there. What they had, 15, 16, 1,700 down there, you know. But there was definitely there was a larger QPR contingent yesterday. And two deciding factors. Obviously, Mr. Briatore stepped down and he's in the background now. And getting in a quality manager like Neil Warnock, yeah. Definitely. I think he put a...
We could conceivably go 13th, and fears of relegation would look a long-distant memory, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly say that. You know, it's very, very tight at the bottom. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday are in 23 point matter so much now, and I'd just like to see Rangers get a few more points under their belt, you know.
QPR fan?
Yeah, we do, Pete. It's from Paul in Ealing, and he says, well, I predicted we would win the game, but was wrong about the team selection. I did not think Tarapt or Priskin would be the type of player Warnock would start against West Brom, but I was pleasantly surprised by the efforts of both players. It was the best performance for a long time, although I'd like to see us keep a clean sheet against Plymouth on Tuesday. Paul goes on to say, I think Warnock already knows which players he wants to bring into the club, but do you think Jay Simpson will be one of them? He says, how much do you think Wenger would want for Simpson, and would other Premier League teams be trying to get him in the summer?
Go on then, Joe.
Well, Jay Simpson, I'd love to have Jay Simpson at QPR, I've got to be honest.
He's fifth top goal scorer in the Championship.
He's a workhorse. He doesn't stop. I mean, he was really... He was dead on his feet on 78 minutes, you know. I thought, take him off, like, you know, the boy, he's run all over the park. He scored the goal. He scored the first goal for us. As to how much Arsenal would want for him, that I couldn't say. You know, I'm really hopeless of what sort of price Jay Simpson would be. But if you ask me, I would want him. I want him. I like him.
OK, we're going to have more QPR chat after the 8 o'clock break, and also back to Chelsea and Brentford. Fulham. But we're going to talk Brentford now. Stuart, you made the long trip up to Helen Road yesterday. You look a bit worse for wear, I've got to say.
I played football this morning as well, too.
Oh, is that your excuse? And you fell asleep this afternoon during the Chelsea game, I hear.
Yes, drab. it was a better game up at Helen Road yesterday. No, amazing day yesterday. One of those days that really made you proud to support the club you love. It was... Well over 2,000 fans singing from the first minute to the 95th.
What were they singing?
I think a few of the Leeds fans were a bit bemused by we're the Barcelona of the lower leagues. They didn't really know where to look. And couldn't believe there is. I mean, about 10 minutes to go, is there a fire drill? Because numerous Leeds fans were leaving the ground.
That's always a classic.
I like that.
Also, 14 players on the pitch. Not one time, obviously, but over the course of the game, who just consistently, continuously ran and ran and ran their hearts out. Yeah. And when you go to places like Leeds, they're going to play football, they're going to knock it about. But every single one of them dug in, and every single one was up to the fight.
Well, let's think about Leeds, and I'll just talk about Leeds for briefly. Beckford obviously been touted to go to the Championship or the Premiership. How did he play against the Brentford back four, which is, you know, by all accounts, not that great?
Well, I mean...
Oh, are they?
Well, we've got Tommy Smith, who played in midweek against for New Zealand against Mexico, made his debut. And, I mean, he's had to come back from America, a long journey, I believe. I don't know if he flew economy class, I'm led to believe.
Yeah.
Which can't be the greatest journey back from America.
You can advertise economy class on FM radio, don't worry.
New Zealand Airways won't let their national team travel business class. But, yeah, so he's had to have a long journey back. Then we've got Leon Legg, who last season was at Tunbridge Angels, and he's come up first season in professional football, and they both have had to play against Luciano Becchio and Beckford. For me, I prefer Becchio, to be honest. I think he does more work for the team. Everyone will say Beckford's the goal-getter, Becchio's the man that brings everyone into the team and does the work for him. But Beckford missed a hatful of chances. To be fair, Becchio missed a few. Beckford missed numerous headers from 8 yards out. At the end of the day, Leeds...
It's like all strikers, though, isn't it? They go through a rich vein of form, and then they can't hit the back of the net, and it looks like he's going through a bit of a bad patch now.
I believe, yeah, that was, I think, 7 games before yesterday's game, and it was a tap-in from 3 yards out of...
So how many Brentford boys made the trip up there then? And what time did you start in the day? What time did you start in the morning tracking up
there?
Well,
we started at 9, but we had a map. We didn't prepare, you know. I don't know about you, but I've
It's only M1, isn't it?
Well, when you get into Leeds, though, we have one of these GPS things on your phone.
Yeah.
And I was
That's what Brentford fans have, I must say.
There's a guy in my car had one of those things on his phone, and I said, let's just find out the B scenario, and he decided to go GPS. We were driving around Leeds for, I think, an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 45 minutes. I don't know if any of you have been to Leeds.
It's not the hardest ground to find as well.
No, it isn't.
So we got there.
Signs on the motorway that say M Road. It's a bit of a good
one. We arrived, I think, 5-10 minutes before kickoff. I had my head in my hands in the car because I thought we were going to miss kickoff. So I missed a lot of the build-up, to be honest. But when I got in there, a good atmosphere down in the stand, a few drinks flowing, really good atmosphere, everyone's in high spirits. And to be honest, we could have got beaten 7-0 yesterday, but as long as the players gave the effort they had, no one was caring. It was our day, to be honest.
So when Stevens pops up and scores after an hour, you think it's going to be your day, don't you?
Well, yeah, I predicted last...
I mean, he's waited there for 12 minutes, you know, but... You know, 60 minutes comes, you score.
And the good thing was... They scored at the end with the Brentford fans.
Yeah, right in front of all of us.
So that was superb, wasn't it?
I mean, a few people when the corner went in, because it wasn't the greatest corner, but it's obviously planned, because it's been put out towards the, like, going away from goal. Leon Legs headed it back in towards the goal. Many people thought, oh, why hasn't he put a bit more whip on it towards the box? But Leon Legs flicked it on, Charlie McDonald's hit it at goal. It was a little bit of a scrap. I think it's come off, it looked like Streffan's head. I don't care how it went in, to be honest. No one cared how it went in. Some people just...
Did you stand up there?
Yeah, well, again, Stu was telling you to sit down. We don't have the problem at Griffin Park. I was right next to the Leeds fans where there were a lot of stewards, so we were continuously being told to sit down. Obviously, it was easier for a few people in the middle.
Because the last time QPR played Leeds, we shouted to them, cheaper seats, that's why you're here, because it was a special discounted offer up at Elland Road when Leeds played QPR. But in relation to the ticket yesterday, how much was it to go and watch the game? How much did it cost you as a fan yesterday?
It's £22 for my ticket. So you're talking 60, 70.
And you didn't help out with the petrol then?
Yeah, put a little bit of money in for petrol, of course. Always pay my way.
Did you? So what time did you get back?
We must have got back 9:30-ish, maybe even 10, stopped at the services, as you do. Overpriced sandwich.
Overpriced sandwich?
Well, I'm not going to say who it was from. But, yeah.
OK, we've got another email from a proud Bee fan.
We got a couple of emails, actually. First off, we've got one from Barry Adams, who says, proud to be a TW8B, well done the lads. And then we have a second email, which is from Cliff Knowles, and he says, hi, I follow all away games, and the support yesterday was awesome. Andy Scott clearly has cool plans in place to go for promotion next season. We've done well against all the big teams. We just need to find an attacking strength. Leeds fans were quiet and seriously nervous that promotion will fall apart. Tough away games still to come. And then he has a question. 4 more wins, will it secure us league status?
Can I just say, league status would mean you go out of the Football League. Well, I'm sure he means Division 1 status.
Yeah. I don't think that's about right, about 4 wins. I mean, as we said the last couple of weeks, consistency is an issue in this league. So I think if you have got 4 more wins, due to the other team's inconsistency, you should be safe. Attacking-wise, you were talking about Rowan Vine. We obviously had him on loan from Portsmouth at the start of his career. Personally, I'd be quite happy if Warnock was willing to let him go on loan. A player like him, I think, would be fantastic for him. I know some people might have reservations of signing a player from QPR, but if Streven's, Court and McDonald, and obviously Weston, guys, well, 31, he hasn't got the legs that he had when he was coming through at Wimbledon.
He's got a
fantastic touch. You can tell that he has got a touch, that he has played at a higher level, whereas some of these players at this level haven't got that touch, and he's into the game. I think he's an asset.
Your home record's actually been very good this year, because you've only lost twice at home. You've got loads of games. How are you going to fit all these games in? Because, you know, you played 31 games. A lot of teams around you play 35.
Well, yeah, we've got 15 games to go, so for us, we're literally just a third through the season, pretty much. So, I mean, it's going to be Tuesday, Saturday, which will mean people like, unfortunately for Carl Court, will he be able to handle 2 games in a week? So then I think you do need to go and look for a striker. We've had John Akindi, who unfortunately, due to the weather, we had him on a one-month loan, got, I think, two games in. So he didn't even get a chance to really prove what he could do. So, I mean, I think we do probably need to bring in someone on loan, if we've got the finances to do so, and I think we should be able to. We've got enough centre midfielders now. We've got people like Marcus Bean, who I believe you used to have at QPR.
Have you got him down there, yeah?
Yeah, we've got massive fans favourite at Brentford, Marcus Bean. Last two seasons has been unbelievable for us. He came on at right wing yesterday, but I think that was more of a shore up the midfield. We're not looking to attack now. Let's shore up that left flank. Because they had Gary McSheffrey and Bradley Johnson at this point down the left wing, both very attacking players. Johnson, you'd say, he was more of a winger than a left back, and before that, Aidan White was playing at left back, who's a very attacking fullback. So I think he was brought on, obviously, to nullify that strength that he's had.
What we've got to hope for is that we don't get any drop of rain between now and next Saturday, because if we do have a drop of rain, it's likely to be called off. But next Saturday, you play MK Dons at home. They're chasing for playoff spot. That's quite a tough game.
It is a tough game. We went to MK Dons just before Christmas, managed to get an amazing 1-0 win, Charlie McDonald. A lot of Brentford fans, as loads of people in the country, have a strong dislike for MK Dons, myself included. So I think for a lot of Brentford fans, it's a game that you really want to win, because speaking for myself, I've got a lot of fans, friends that were fans of Wimbledon, and obviously the situation that happened down there. So for a lot of Brentford fans, it's a game that they really want to win. And I think it is a game that you can win. Obviously, they've got some class players, Easter and Wilbraham up front, a great forward line. But then again, we played against Becchio and Beckford yesterday. We managed to handle them for 90 minutes.
We're looking at that league table, Division 1, and it still looks pretty much like Norwich are obviously going to go up. But Leeds, you know, Charlton, Colchester, even Swindon. I mean, Swindon got battered yesterday. But, you know, it would be a catastrophe if Leeds didn't go up this year, surely.
It would. I mean, I think, as was pointed out in that email, there was a bit of nervousness around the ground. They had so much of the ball, yet for me, I didn't really feel at any point, hang on, there's a goal coming here.
Did the Leeds fans sort of at any point sort of, you know, did you feel under pressure? You know, because it can be an intimidating place at the moment. I must say, 25,000 there yesterday, that's not what it could be capacity wise, but they can make it a fortress. But was there no point really where you felt under pressure?
To be honest, I've been to some away games and you feel intimidated by the opposition fans and you really feel like this is their home. What you're doing here, you're not welcome.
Yeah,
but yesterday, it wasn't. They did that marching on together, and it was really quite muted. It was quite friendly. It didn't really feel like passionate the way they'd sing it normally. And when I've seen them on TV and things, it was kind of just like marching on together, and just a little bit of a clap and a punch. It didn't really seem like they weren't really up for it. And I think we came there, and people are saying it was our cup final, and we really wanted it. And I think at the end of the day, our fans wanted it more, our players wanted it more, and it showed on the pitch.
You've obviously that big game against Leeds. Is there anything now, between now and the end of the season, particular games that you're looking forward to as a Bees fan?
MK Dons on Saturday, I'm really excited about. Leighton Orient at home. It's obviously quite a local game again. And I'll probably make the trip to Millwall away.
When have you got Millwall?
We've got Millwall away coming up. And obviously they're flying as well. They're looking to get that last playoff place. Huddersfield losing yesterday to Gillingham. They nipped in with a point, Millwall, away, last minute goal away at Walsall, which isn't an easy game place to go.
So I can throw away my 33-1 each way bet on Brentford, which I took at the beginning of the season, can I?
I think it's beyond us, yeah.
To be fair, I didn't do it really, but I just thought I'd say.
No, I don't think any Brentford fan. We've had an amazing, it's been fantastic first season back, to be honest. It really is a really good time to be a Brentford fan. We've got a manager who got so much pride for. He's an amazing manager. He's probably one of the best young managers in the lower leagues. I think eventually he probably will manage a club in a higher division. Hopefully it will be taking us into the Championship, which it could well be next year. We've got a manager we all love. He's obviously played for us. We've got a team who are fighting for the cause, so it's just a great time to be a Brentford fan.
OK, you're listening to the 90-Minute Football Show. After the break, we're going to go back and speak about all the West London clubs that we're involved with. That's Chelsea, Fulham, Brentford and QPR. We've got to take the normal break now, but we'll be back after this.
London is on 101.4 on FM. 101.4 on FM Sport.
You're listening to the 90-Minute Football Show, the fans show presented by fans. Ian, let's talk about the games coming up in the week and the UEFA Champions League games, Arsenal and Manchester United. Arsenal play FC Porto, Manchester United play Milan. Are they both going to go through?
Manchester United, I think the hard work's been done there. If Ferguson's comments are to be believed, they're without Wayne Rooney for that second leg, but with a 3-2 lead, I can't see them losing by two goals. So United, I think, comfortable. Arsenal-Porto a little bit more interesting. If Arsenal concede one there, could get tricky. I think they are going to have enough. I'd go 3-1 in that game, but I think it's going to be a sweaty night for Arsenal fans.
A sweaty night.
I tend to agree with you there, Ian. I mean, I think Porto will score. I think Arsenal's defence is inconsistent at best, and I can see Porto definitely scoring against. I can see that game possibly going to penalties. They'll need to. I'm convinced Porto will score, so they'll need to score 3 goals. They're almost certainly without Cesc Fabregas on Tuesday as well. Picked up a hamstring injury yesterday, which doesn't bode well because he's been Arsenal's best player this season, which is a change for Cesc Fabregas. He's an inconsistent player himself. As an Arsenal fan, I'm worried about Porto really, really big time, and clean sheet is a must. It's not going to come, so I can see us. I think you're right. I think we just have about enough, but I think it may take a penalty shootout to see us.
If I look across that Arsenal defence, you've got the individuals there: Clichy, Sanya, Galas, Silvestre, Vermaelen, Song, stroke Diaby in front of them, Almunia, obviously in goal. That individually, on paper, that seems pretty strong. From an Arsenal fan's point of view, what do you think is the reason there for that bit of defensive inconsistency?
I don't think Almunia is up to the job, definitely as a goalkeeper. I've never been a fan of Manuel Almunia, and one thing that's annoyed me this season, it seems our best goalkeeper's out on loan at Brentford, putting in man of the match performances in almost every week. That annoys me. Wenger inherited a really decent back five when he first came to the club. He's never been able to replace that back five, and what is his back five now is nowhere near up to the standard which when he first took over. This is a problem he has, but he wants to stick with this youth. Arsenal fans have been going on for a good few seasons about a strong holding centre midfielder just in front of that back four. Alex Song has kind of filled in that role this season, but he's too young. I don't think he's big enough to actually, especially against the likes of Chelsea, he's going to get muscled off the ball by that midfield. I think the main problem is the goalkeeper, though. I think Vermaelen has been brilliant this season for a new signing. Galas has had a good season. Clichy, I've been disappointed with out of all the back four. Clichy at times seems to lack pace, which seems ridiculous saying that about Gael Clichy. I think that's probably the main problem. Personally, I think the main problem is the goalkeeping situation.
Tom. The big one on Thursday.
Yeah.
I'm actually quite looking forward to watching this game. And just to the point that the second game gets played at 6 o'clock at Craven Cottage. That's ridiculous. But we'll just talk about the game coming up. You're making the trip out there.
I'm making the trip. Yeah, it'll be the third time I've gone abroad this season. I went to Vilnius, went to Rome. This has got to be, I mean, to my mind, the biggest game in Fulham's history. Not necessarily the most important, but definitely the biggest. Now, if you think back 14 years ago, and we were down at the bottom of League 2, losing at home to Torquay, Juventus were in the final of the Champions League. You know, someone had said then you'd be playing them in 14 years'
time. Can I ask you, did you make the trip to Torquay?
it was a home game, in fact, that we lost.
You must have played away to him.
But no, I mean, really, it was obviously a really exciting week this week. Had a bit of a nightmare on Friday, and there's a bit of controversy about the way the tickets were all allocated. Obviously, all the fans, as soon as we knew we were playing Juventus, booked up accommodation and flights. And then we heard that there was a problem, or there was going to be a small allocation at Juventus because of the way their ground's set up. There is only a certain designated away area, and all the fans were worrying about whether we would get tickets. Now, if you were flying with the club on the official club flight, which is £400 for nothing apart from the flight, a one night stay, and a guarantee of a match ticket, then you had a ticket guaranteed. For everyone else who's making the trip independently, tickets went on sale Friday morning at 9 a.m. There's only just over 1,500 tickets, and only one per season ticket holder was the allocation. Now, I'm going with two friends, one of which, who did have a season ticket, gave it up this year. I'm using my dad's season ticket for him. I'm obviously using my own season ticket for me. My other friend isn't a member, isn't a season ticket holder. There was a chance, there was no way of getting a ticket, and we thought we were going out there probably to sit in the home end or maybe just watching a bar. And I know that a lot of fans are going out there without tickets. And I don't think, I mean, a lot of the fans on the message board have been expressing anger at the way the club has sort of handled the ticketing situation. Fortunately, I managed to post on the message board and get a person I don't know to give us his season ticket details, and we've all got tickets in the end. But yeah, it was a bit of a stressful day on Friday.
What is your best you can hope for there? I mean, you've obviously done well against...
You've done well
in Europe. And this game, you know, it's a big, big game, but Juventus are there to get a result against.
Well, I mean, Juventus have been struggling this season. Zaccheroni has been the victim of, chance to get him out. I do know that last week they played Palermo, and after they lost, that their fans set fire to part of the ground. So their form hasn't been good. There's no way they're going to win Serie A this year. Italian teams in general, much like a lot of countries, don't treat the UEFA or Europa Cup that seriously. They're still challenging for that fourth spot in Serie A to get a Champions League space. So I would have thought we'd probably be taking the game more seriously than they will. If you look at the names in their squad, they've got world class players there, players that we've watched playing the Champions League, playing the World Cup. They've got Del Piero, they've got Buffon, they've got Trezeguet, Camoranesi. You know, all players that on paper are far superior to the Fulham team. But as we showed in the previous round, we've knocked out the holders. You know, if we can do that, there's no reason we can't go on and win the Europa Cup. I'd say I'm actually confident. I actually think we will knock them out, Juventus, over the two legs. And I'm going to say a 1-1 or 0-0 draw to start with week.
Good to you. While Fulham play Juventus, QPR, they play Plymouth.
Yeah.
The laughs on us this time.
It's not quite as glamorous.
No, it's definitely not, is it?
Well, another big game for QPR.
Mm.
And another must-win game to give us that little bit of...
What crowd goes and watches our games?
I think it does. Unfortunately, it probably wasn't third.
Mm.
There's no way I'd be able to do that on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night if Arsenal and United and Chelsea are playing.
On FM radio after the game against West Bromwich Albion.
Very happy today to get that win and a good start for Neil Warnock as well.
Yeah, I think it's always very nice to win games, especially the... We haven't had so many lately, so and obviously it's nice to start with a new manager with a win.
Yeah.
So it gives us a positive start.
Had he lifted the mood a bit around the training ground? Was there a good impact when he came in?
I think everyone knows how enthusiastic he is about doing things, and I think that his enthusiasm is transferring to players' enthusiasm, and it shows us on the pitch as well. So, and obviously that helped us win as well today.
I've heard he says he likes to give the players a very tough training session when he first arrives. Was that the case?
Yeah, he made us warm shin pads in the first training, so...
But how did you react to that? Was it okay? Wasn't too tough?
I think as a professional player, you need to take on board every idea that your manager has and just accept his philosophy of the game. But I think that's what we needed at the moment.
Yeah.
We just need a leader who prepares us for the games, for the fight.
Do you think it's good that the amount of managers you've had over the season, do you think it's a good thing that the players have had to prove themselves again and again? Do you think it keeps the players on their toes, or is it quite unsettling that you just want to get on with the season?
I'll answer differently, honest. I think it's... I don't think it's good for a team to change managers as often as we do, but... Obviously, as a player, that's the motivation for you to get in a team with every manager you have to adapt to every system we play, the things that manager asks from you.
Has he changed much since he's come in, or just basically?
He's been there only for 3 days, so we haven't really had so much time with him, but. Like I said, I think it was a good impact on our game, on our fighting spirit and everything. So hopefully, we have now a couple of days to the next game and we can improve game after game.
Caspers, it's been a long time since QPR have kept a clean sheet. And considering last season, it was like a record-breaking season for clean sheets. Can you put your finger on why it's not happening this season?
I don't know. We're not good enough, maybe, defensively. I don't know, really. Because at the beginning of the season, it didn't bother too much because we were scoring four goals every game. So that was not too bad. But obviously, when we stopped scoring, we still conceded at least a goal every game, so that's a big problem for us. And obviously for me as a defender, it's very frustrating that even today that you can say that West Brom didn't have any clear chances and they still get a goal against us. And I think it was same against Doncaster, so it is a bit frustrating, but hopefully we can change that as well.
And with having another goalkeeper in on loan and you play in front of Cherny, you know, for a season essentially, you got to adapt then to another voice behind you. Has that been difficult?
I think they both have their weaknesses and their strengths. Obviously they are very different goalkeepers, but I don't think for us defenders it's a big difference. It's still our job to block the shots, and we haven't done that well that we did last year. So I think it's a bit of a mix of everything, really. But hopefully we can change that, because you know, that gives me a little sleepless night, that thing.
What do you think is the target now for the rest of the season? You're up to 40 points. You obviously want to get above 50, get safe. Does it really matter where the team finishes this season?
To be honest, I don't really like talking about targets at the moment, because we always talk we want to go playoffs, and that, and what point we were nearly bottom three. So I think we need to take one game at a time, and we'll see where it takes us.
101.4 on FM Sport. Sport.
Well, we've got an email already from a Brentford and why.
Fancy. But yeah, as I say, not that many in there of there, but I think that was still their biggest attendance since Boxing Day, to be fair to them.
Right, okay. Ian, question for you as a Chelsea fan. I won't say, he says that you come across as a smug Chelsea fan, but are Chelsea fans generally smug?
If I didn't come across as a smug Chelsea fan, I wouldn't feel I was doing my job properly. No, I mean, what are we supposed to do? I'm either arrogant or I'm defeatist, aren't I? It's going to be one or the other. As Chelsea are at the moment...
The treble's still on, isn't it?
We hope to win trophies. I don't expect to win trophies.
Good.
As we've said before, there are a very limited number that you can win each season.
That's true.
And for three of those, we're competing with Manchester United and Arsenal and Tottenham and Liverpool and Manchester City. And for the others, we're competing with Barcelona and Real Madrid and the likes of Juve and people like that are now dropping into the Europa League. So there's no easy trophies out there to be won.
But does it make you as a Chelsea fan more craving for the success? Because last week you lost against Man City, and, yeah, and the Chelsea fans leave him about sort of at a half time.
It makes it all the more painful when you lose. The higher the expectations, and obviously, as we've said before, I supported Chelsea through the 80s when we were complete dross. The thing is, during that time, if you went away to, I don't know, the likes of Bolton or somebody like that, and you scraped a draw, you were happy with that. But of course, now it's no longer good enough, and you expect to win those kind of matches.
Joe, question from you, from a QPR fan, from a John Porter. Now the Walnuts come in, where do you want to finish come the end of the season?
I just want Rangers to be safe. And I think we can push it. I think then we can push on in the summer. Apparently he was having a meeting yesterday, only a rumour. And
we can't talk about rumours, can we?
We definitely can't talk about rumours. And he's already struck up.
I mean, there's a rumour of a target man that we might be bringing in. But dare I say that on air?
Pete, he's already struck up a good relationship with Amit.
Yeah.
Anishin, and you know, I just want Rangers to be safe. I think every Rangers fan just wants us to be safe, and then let's see what we do next season. That's it. Where we finish, I'm not bothered. Just safety.
In relation to you, Tom, Fulham on ninth at the moment. What position do you have to get to the UEFA Cup next year?
I think it does. Obviously, depends on the way the FA Cup goes, who's in the final, and so on. I mean, last year we finished seventh and made it. I think it is at least top seven, probably. This year, we're looking at maybe if Chelsea don't win the FA Cup. Well, Chelsea, if they're in the final, and you know, depending on who they're playing, if Spurs are in the final with them and they've got a Champions League spot, then there'll be an extra UEFA Cup place. But you've got to look at basically top seven, top six, and you know that is beyond us.
Can you win the UEFA Cup?
Yes, we can. Yeah, but I mean, I believe we can. I'm not just saying that we will.
We've got a chance, though. I mean, I didn't mention earlier, but, I mean, it's going to be very difficult against Juventus. We will be missing Danny Murphy, who stupidly got himself sent off in the last minute of the...
And what's that 6 o'clock kickoff all about?
Yeah, it's something to do with it's UEFA law and ITV rules. TV dictates, obviously, these days when football is played, and sadly, it's a fact that they want to show the Liverpool game and the Fulham game on the same night, on the same channel, and so one of those games has to be played beforehand, and unfortunately, it's us.
Can you not play each other in the semi-finals, or could you potentially play Liverpool in the semi-finals?
We could play them. Well, the next round is the quarter-final. If we get through against Juventus, we'll be in the quarter-final.
Okay,
and it's an open draw. We could get Liverpool in the quarter-final.
I hope you murder them.
So do I.
Stuart, I mean, obviously, we talked last week about Brentford being 14th. I mean, is that the expectations now, just to be safe and just...
happily sit there for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Maybe cost MK Dons a playoffs at the weekend would do me pretty nicely. I'll be happy for the rest of the year, to be honest. After yesterday, I couldn't care less as long as we stay up.
I mean, last week we had the talk about John Terry, and briefly let's touch on the England game, Ian. He didn't really... I mean, he got boos at the beginning, but, I mean, I think the fans now have sort of accepted
him. It wasn't as bad as I feared it would be. The booing was fairly minimal. And to be honest with you, I think it's rather silly. I mean, the only people who John Terry have actually wronged are his wife and kids. If they want to turn up and boo him, that's all good.
Yeah, but I would say that, you know, there's about 7 of us in the studio and 6 of them are Team Bridge. But I'm amazed to see that Tevez is in the news today about potential blonde, allegedly.
Oh, really?
I mean, isn't that...
that would just show that Tevez is rather a hypocrite. This isn't about who John Terry has slept with, Pete, as you well know. Go back about 8 years, and Beckham was being booed for no other reason than he was the highest profile player of the team that were then the most hated in the country. The same is true of John Terry now. That's why he's getting booed.
It was quite funny though, towards the end of the England game, all these armbands kept being given out because everyone was coming off. And it was like, we can't give it to John
Terry. Yeah, occur to me that must have stung him. But I thought he had a fairly decent game. He had a good game today. Hopefully now he's feeling a little bit happier, and we'll see the real John Terry for the rest of the season.
Tom, it didn't happen in your game yesterday, but the goal line technology came into play yesterday.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, what do you think about that?
Well,
anyone got a strong view on that?
I thought it was particularly ironic. Yesterday, or was it today perhaps, FIFA announced that they've basically ruled out the use of goal line technology. That's both video replays and the chip in the ball. And then on that very day, Birmingham go and score a perfectly legitimate goal, clearly over the line. Everyone can see it on the replay, and the goal was ruled out. Now, I find it absolutely staggering that the authorities in football can say, with the weight of evidence, that the way it's worked for rugby league, rugby union, cricket, tennis, it's demonstrated, you know, basically has improved those games no end. And for them to say that it doesn't really work with the culture of football, that they want to retain an element of human, I think they said something along the lines of that there should be mistakes almost, that mistakes should be a part and parcel of the game, that human error is a fundamental part of football and its history. And that's ridiculous. I mean, you look at teams who are down at the bottom, or if there's a cup final, you know, goals that go in.
Actually, we got an email for you, Tom, about 6 referees in the Europa Cup.
That's right. Yeah, that's the idea they're trying in the Europa Cup. That's being painted this season. You've got a referee on each goal line who are there to basically decide whether or not the ball crosses the line. But I mean, I can't. Even if I can understand the objection against video replay, I can understand that might pause the game in some way. Not that I think that ball, it goes over the line. If it crosses the line, a little alarm goes off in the referee's ear or the linesman's ear, and that's a goal.
Over the line. But how many times have we seen a penalty being given against us, or a sending off, and then you go home...
Hawkeye, where they get that they're allowed...
It's worked really well.
And they're allowed 2 claims, and if, you know, whether they're right or wrong, really good idea. If they stay on the line, you don't need the goal line technology. But it's been a farce.
It just introduces 2 more people who may get it wrong. And if they get it wrong, you know, after they've trialled that system, then it makes it look even more stupid.
Are there enough referees in the country to have 6 refs at every league game through the season at those times when we've got a full fixture programme, or let's say the first round of the FA Cup?
But surely they can put a camera in the top part of the crossbar. You know, along the crossbar, there's a camera that'd be able to look down and see.
But they actually did it at Loftus Road about 15 years ago, just as a trial. It was on something like Blue Peter or something like that. This is for real. But it never took off. And you're exactly right. It was at the joint of the crossbar and the post. So,
What's your feel about being able to question decisions during a game? Surely, in this world of technology and cricket, as you said, and tennis, they do that. Sometimes fans go home, they feel cheated. That, you know, that the referee hasn't made a right decision.
Well, you never know what's... You don't know what's happened, do you? I mean, if you... It's not a sport that I like, but American football, you know, they're mic'd up and they tell you exactly what the decision is. I think sometimes, you know, the amount of money that football supporters are paying, they should know what that decision's about. But did you see it? Did I see it? No, you don't know
I mean, they talk about it, then you see Thierry Henry, who's got France into the World Cup, on the basis of a hand on the ball inside the net, surely.
The problem for me about this, Pete, is that the games that we've been talking about, the other sports that we've been talking about, tennis, cricket, American football, they are all stop-start.
Yeah,
one of the things that we love about
football...
that we love about football is that it flows.
Yeah.
But if you've got a contentious issue
being done, like a sending off, and the ball goes out of play, you can make a decision there and then. If fourth official can see that on the camera and make a decision.
What if the ball doesn't go out of play? What if it goes down the other end of the park?
You said if the ball goes
out. You play it out until it goes out of play and then you rewind. The ball won't... I mean, a typical 90-minute game, I think the ball was in play for around 45 to 55 minutes. There's plenty of time when the ball's out of play.
Say you stop for a free kick and you say, sorry, that was a free kick, she gets sent off. Let's go to a camera. That wasn't a free kick, wasn't a sent off. What do you do with the ball?
Well, I think this conversation will go on and on, but I do believe that, you know, you don't want to question every decision that happens during the game, but if a captain or a manager can question a couple of decisions, I think that would be better for the game. You
just disagree. Goal line technology, that's it.
That's the main one. Right. Chipping the ball.
Okay. We are running out of time. I'd like to thank Stuart, our Brentford fan, Ian, our Chelsea fan, Joe, QPR, Tom Fulham. You've been listening to the 90-Minute Football Show.
This is London. This is London. 101.4 on FM.